I'm speaking with Tom Hayden, who is the founder and director of the Peace and Justice Research Center in Culver City. Tom Hayden is a founding member of Students for a Democratic Society and was active in the anti-war movement and went on to serve for 18 years in the California legislature. Currently, he works on projects aimed at ending the United States' current wars, stopping sweatshop labor, and protecting the environment. He is the author of The Long 60s, from 1960 to Barack Obama, and has an op-ed in today's Los Angeles Times with Afghanistan, A Moment of Opportunity for Obama. Welcome to Background Briefing, Tom Hayden.
Thanks very much, Ian. I enjoy your program and reporting.
Well, thank you, Tom. And it seems to me that even though it's clear that this is an opportunity for the president to get out, if you will, of the what I think most people see as a quagmire in Afghanistan, how much do you think he contributed to his own demise in the 2008 election by basically saying and running on this, in effect, as a campaign issue, that I will do Afghanistan better, and that we dropped the ball, we got distracted in Iraq, and I'm going to fix Afghanistan?
Well, who knows? I don't know whether he believed that. I certainly think that young candidate for president, he decided that he had to take a very strong position on national security. He was very aware that 9/11 was far from over in the American psyche. You will recall that he said if he had a chance and there was actionable intelligence, he would kill bin Laden. This started with John Kerry, who 4 years before said there's good wars and bad wars, Iraq's a mistake, and Afghanistan's a good war. So he did bring it on to an extent. It may also have been one of the reasons that he won the presidency. And ever since, if you look at Bob Woodward's books, you'll see that he's been trying to find a way out. It's harder to get out than to get in.
And obviously there's been a battle within the administration over the competing strategies, counterterrorism advocated by Vice President Joe Biden and counterinsurgency advocated by McChrystal and the other generals now and Petraeus. One would think that having struck the blow that they did against Osama bin Laden, that and this is basically what you're arguing in your opinion piece in today's Los Angeles Times, that the time is ripe now. So do you think that there's going to... One of the things about this whole war that's made... I've always asked everybody I've talked to about it, the simple question, which is, how come we're fighting millions of Pashtuns in one country in order to eliminate a couple of hundred al-Qaeda in another country that also happens to be our ally? And do you think that the killing of bin Laden focuses a little attention on that inconsistency?
I don't know. There is a gut feeling among the American public, among rank and file Democrats, that they can tell a war that's going wrong. They can tell when they're not getting all the truth. So who's to say what's going on behind the scenes? But yes, the answer is the argument that you don't need 150,000 troops, American troops, in Afghanistan and Iraq to get Osama bin Laden. That argument is won. Now, he therefore has the moral and political capital to navigate his way out of both wars. There's 47,000 American troops like sitting ducks in Iraq, and the military is lobbying to keep them there. Taking them out would save about $50 billion a year to the taxpayer. There's 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. Taking half of them out in the next 18 months would save you another $60 to $80 billion. And so there's ample reason, I think, to do it. He has to decide immediately, if he hasn't already, he has to decide immediately what is his what he's going to do with respect to Iraq. The Iraq lobby is clamoring to keep a base and 50,000 American troops there. With Afghanistan, the Afghanistan lobby is saying only make a token teeny withdrawal starting this July. He promised when he announced his surge of 33,000 troops that he would begin to draw down starting this July. On the other hand, you know, he's got to look at the American voters, and the political question is, will he benefit from campaigning on a promise to get out of two quagmires? What do you think?
Well, Tom Hayden, your argument that this is his moment of opportunity, and that the idea would be that you can isolate the hawks in the Pentagon and in the Republican Party, have them calling for endless wars, and Obama could campaign on, I'm the guy that got us out of two quagmires. My only skepticism is from what's happening now. Here he has, he's turned the entire Democrats are wimps on its head by being the macho commander-in-chief. And look what kind of honeymoon he's getting from the Republicans and from Fox News and the right. I mean, it's extraordinary. One day of praise, and now they're calling him everything from a murderer who kills unarmed people.
Well, all the more reason that he should not follow the advice of Republicans like John McCain, who we remember he ran against, who wants him to get sunk in Libya, or John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, who just got back from a brilliant tour of Iraq to say we should stay in Iraq. He's not going to get anywhere, in my political judgment, by copying them. He's got to get back his rank-and-file base. And with this new stature that he has, I think he does have the capital, the political capital, to say we're getting out responsibly from two of these. And whether I like it or not, and I don't, he can say, I'm still going to keep going after terrorists in Pakistan and Yemen. I'll take one war at a time if we can get out of any of them, because these are trillion-dollar fiascos that we cannot afford given the economy.
Well, you can make the case, Tom Hayden, that we're investing billions in mud brick villages to bring democracy to a 12th century culture, while the Chinese are investing in high tech and green energy. And furthermore, the United States military is protecting a huge Chinese investment in a copper mine. So far, you could make the case, surely, that the only winners in Afghanistan are the Chinese.
I can agree with that, and I certainly think that President Obama and his advisors, his political advisors, see the need for a strategic shift to improve our economy and to make us more competitive in those economic areas where the Chinese are doing so well. They want to get out of Afghanistan and Iraq, but it's a political question, and they are certainly cold-blooded enough to say, we'll only get out if it's successful for us in terms of American politics. So the Democratic National Committee has taken a position in favor of getting out of Afghanistan as rapidly as possible. The Obama White House did not object to that resolution when Barbara Lee introduced it. MoveOn, which is notoriously linked to the Obama administration, just jumped back into the anti-war movement. Haven't seen them since he was elected. And they're out gathering 150,000 petitions, and I suspect Obama appreciates that. So the climate's being prepared. Whether he makes this decision or not is for us to find out, but it will be soon. So that's why I tried to write this op-ed piece, because if he hasn't made the decision, he'll make it in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I think.
Again, I'm speaking with Tom Hayden, who has an op-ed in today's Los Angeles Times called With Afghanistan, A Moment of Opportunity for Obama. And I suppose the extent to which the honeymoon is over in terms of Obama getting some good press and for once the canard that the Democrats are soft on communism or soft on terrorism and aren't the suitable stewards of our national security has been turned on its head. I suppose, in a way, Tom Hayden, the virulence with which he is being attacked by Fox and some of their Judge Napolitano and Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin, who's crediting George W. Bush with killing Osama bin Laden, not the president might indicate a sort of desperation on their part, that they're afraid that they're going to lose this card that they've played relentlessly since the beginning of the Cold War.
Yes, and they are so unified, so well organized under the leadership of Fox News. I can't for the life of me think of the American people agreeing with that. I think you're right, Ian, that he has neutralized the soft on terrorism argument, and they're upset about it. But, you know, he still has considerable ground to cover in terms of the economy, unemployment, Wall Street scandals. He's got a campaign in those states where he barely won last time, and the unemployment is very high. And that's why I think it would be wise for him to link the foreign and domestic and say, by getting out of Afghanistan and out of Iraq, I'm saving, and this is a minimum figure, I'm saving the taxpayer $1 trillion that can be invested in infrastructure in Ohio, Wisconsin, California, and so on. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a winning argument if he would only make it, but who are we?
Well, you know, you're certainly right, Tom Hayden, in the sense that the polls indicate, and the latest Pew poll that just came out today indicates that foreign policy is not high on the agenda in terms of the interests and priorities of the American voters at the moment, and the economy looms large. And if he were to argue that, hey, I'm going to fix potholes in Main Street, USA, not in Kabul, I think he'd get a lot of mileage.
I think so, and let's bore into that a little more deeply. The economy is not going to recover that rapidly and bring in new tax revenue. Tax loopholes are not going to be closed. The oil companies and the rich are not going to be paying their fair share anytime soon. So if you are actually looking for discretionary money to put into rebuilding America, it would only come from the $60 to $80 billion that you would save by not per year by not continuing with Afghanistan, and the $60 billion that you would save by getting those 47,000 troops out of Iraq. So they are linked, and the only hard-headed way to get the money is to end the funding for the war. I notice that the economists that you talk to frequently, most of them don't make this linkage, and they have a kind of a haughty attitude about the profession of economics, and they say that the military spending is not essential, and they go on to theorize. But I can't figure out where else the money would come from if he wants to go out and promise people investment in improving roads in their state. I don't know where it comes from.
Well, it's
you can't be a deficit hawk and a war hawk.
Well,
to your economist friends.
I know. Well, you know, I must say, I've got some good people coming on Sunday that certainly will make those arguments. But one has got a book called Zombie Economics, which questions why Thatcher and Reagan still live. I mean, as you probably noticed, Tom Hayden, a right wing acolyte of both Ayn Rand and Margaret Thatcher.
Ayn Rand is still alive.
Exactly. Well, up in Canada, this guy just got elected.
Exactly.
So something's strange happening out there. Just in the last few minutes, let's turn to the conundrum with Pakistan, given that the inherent problem the U.S. has with Pakistan is that Pakistan has very different objectives in Afghanistan, and they're not reconcilable with U.S. objectives. And some argue that to some extent it's a surrogate war between India and Pakistan, and the Americans are just bleeding themselves, their treasure and lives unnecessarily. But given what happened in Pakistan with the killing of Osama bin Laden, then three questions arise about our so-called ally, the Pakistanis. Either one, the official story is true, and they didn't know he was there, and they were caught by surprise. Nobody believes that. The other possibility is that the very people at the top in the ISI and the military there were in fact sheltering bin Laden, and that he was some kind of an asset, and that opens up some terribly damning questions about how long this relationship's gone on and could it have preceded 9/11. And then the third option is that rogue elements within the military at the, say, colonel level knew about this or were sheltering bin Laden. And that opens up some really serious questions about the stewardship and custodians of the nuclear arsenal, if indeed rogue elements can operate within the ISI. So none of these options are very good.
Well, I've heard you discussing this during drive time, and I think it's a good discussion. My focus is on getting out of Afghanistan and Iraq at the moment. But with respect to the theories out there, another possibility, I've written about this on my blog, there's something surprising about the lack of defense at the bin Laden compound. And it could be that bin Laden was effectively isolated and that Pakistan thought better to keep him under that kind of isolation. He certainly was not the head of a big multinational corporation, not the head of a big international army, although let's see what those tapes show that the commandos took away with. If I'm right, and the initial story was completely made up about the gunfight, the OK Corral scenario, I think something may have happened and on the deepest level of Machiavellian politics went down and somebody abandoned him.
Well, just to return there to a fundamental question in terms of our withdrawal from Afghanistan, which you are advocating and suggesting that this is an opportune moment for the president to do so, everybody has basically argues that the real strategic linchpin is Pakistan, and that we can't get out of Afghanistan and leave Pakistan destabilized. How would you address that? How do you think the chips are going to fall?
I would go to people like Scott Atran. I don't know if you've had him on the show at New York and University of Michigan, but he's interviewed a lot of the Taliban, and he's written on the ground for years. He's a very respected writer for the New York Times from time to time. And basically, I think the war between Obama and Pakistan will go on. The drone strikes will escalate, and it'll become even more unstable. I don't like that. I'm not justifying that. But the way out of that, the de-escalation, would be precisely through creating a ceasefire and a power-sharing partition, territorial partition, in Afghanistan, with Pakistan getting in the midst of that, in the background behind the Taliban. The Taliban cannot be defeated in those Pashtun areas in southern Afghanistan and Pakistan that you described. There's not even a border there. So you'll have to call that a kind of a haven for the Taliban. To people who say, "Well, aren't they going to invite Al Qaeda back and attack us from their enclaves?" And this is what they would be, enclaves. I would say, "Well, we've just seen plenty of proof that any such activity could be taken out by counterterrorism, by special forces, not by sending in tens of thousands of American troops who." Antagonize everybody. So right. I think Pakistan. The other thing is the United States is more in love with India, and which is a non-Muslim country in terms of the majority, than it is with Pakistan. So that alignment is a real problem. There's this dreamy belief in a high-tech future with India, and the view of Pakistan is a failed state. That has to change. But the way forward is to give up on trying to defeat the Taliban in Afghanistan and accept the reality that there's a civil division there, there's a territorial division, that the traditional idea of enclaves and power sharing with perhaps some international peacekeeping forces brought in who are not part of the conflict. All that has to get underway. It's got to go forward. And that's a story that you might look at because I think it's happening, and the media doesn't want to cover it. But there's ongoing talks now with the Taliban and between Afghanistan and Pakistan, not on deep background. They just the peace talks. Sure. Aren't interesting. But if you're going to get out, you've got to have a diplomatic, the implementation of something.
Right.
I think it'll be a quasi-partitioning of Afghanistan with Pakistan and the Taliban having greater influence in the south. Sad, because it takes you right back to the division of 10 years ago. Remember?
Well, but I think the basic point you're making is that the big footprint is unsustainable, and it may well be causing the problems that we're facing. And by removing it and having a smaller footprint, we may be able to deal with whatever happens. So, I thank you for joining us, Tom Hayden.
Thank you. Always good. Keep it up.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Tom Hayden, who is the founding member of the Students for Democratic Society, former California Assemblyman and Senator, and the founder and director of the Peace and Justice Resource Center in Culver City.